Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Real Ghost Stories Online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is, and on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, could a missing piece of carpet be a clue that something terrible once happened in a listener's childhood bedroom? Working late one night proves to be a bad idea for one college student. Could a cultural taboo explain why some members come back as ghosts? And a bank-owned home has been repossessed in more ways than one. Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you once again.
Hello.
Hi, and how are you this fine day?
I'm good. Good. It's a pretty day.
I'm regretting eating jalapeno peppers stuffed with cheese for lunch.
Why? Great.
A little heartburn there. So I'm drinking my great value purified water that we're trying to get rid of from our storm room as we begin to get rid of all of the random extra food and things that are sitting around our home as we get ready for a move. But there you go. There's a use for the water now.
There you go.
Down about 3 of them now since lunch. But they were, in fact, delicious. I will say that.
And they were.
I love my stuffed jalapenos. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Of course, you can write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com, or email Jenny your audio if you record it on your smartphone. Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. 867-5309.
Yeah.
Right?
I used to give that out sometimes.
I got it right this time. Yeah. Do not call that number. That's not accurate. So there you go. We got lots of stories here today. I know you're excited about one of the phone calls we have lined up today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious as to why.
It's just a really good story.
Can you give a little teaser? Can you give a little anything?
No, just play it.
No, that we do that towards the end.
No, just...
No!
Oh, I love it.
You have to sit and wait.
Okay.
And that's how it works. So that phone call that she's excited about coming up very soon. That's how it works.
That.
It's a teaser.
I hate that.
That's what you do. That's how it works.
I have no patience.
You're on this side of the microphone now.
Uh-huh.
So this is how you have to do it. You tease it. You don't just give it all in the first 5 seconds.
I still see things and hear things from a listener's perspective, so it's like I want it now.
Sure.
Okay. Well,
that's not how it works.
I know.
Monique writes in, so I'm actually from Portland, Oregon, but back when I was in middle school and high school, I'd visit my mom down in Burney, California in summertime. The two distinct places that stuck out in my mind that she lived in were a townhouse apartment where I had the feeling of uneasiness anywhere near the stairs, and in the bathroom, especially at night. In my bedroom, there was a feeling of being watched at night, and so even sleeping with a nightlight at the age of 14, I still felt a little uneasy. I suppose it didn't help that I had my dead great Aunt Tilly's bed dresser and vanity in my room then. However, that's not even the worst situation. I remember being really bad. The worst one that I remember was a house on Toronto Street, which we literally called the Toronto House. This house wasn't very old. The architecture was fairly modern, and the house was in an L shape, which meant that it had what could be two living rooms and a collection of bedrooms and a bathroom at the other end. Anyway, there was something dark in that house that everyone who visited could sense something foreboding. Before I even came out there, when I came to visit my mom, the only winter my mom stayed in the house was really weird. In Burnie, it seems to snow every winter, and my mom had a friend over one evening when they both noticed that it was starting to pile up pretty decently. My mom, being a big fan of the snow, went to take some pictures with her digital camera. If my memory serves me right, she took about 3 photos, and she went to go look at them. She noticed something was wrong. One of the photos had an outline of what looked like a man standing in the backyard where she took said pictures. My mom and her friend were totally freaked out. Later on that year, my mom had a few things going on, like what seemed like someone was throwing dishes and such off the counters, and the overall foreboding feeling of being watched. During this time, my mom had a friend who was a Pitt River native, nicknamed Mrs., who visited fairly often.
MS.
Just MS?
Just MS.
I thought it was like Miss.
No.
Just MS?
Just MS.
Nicknamed MS, who visited fairly often. My mom told her about the happenings, and MS asked her where the energy seemed to come from most. My mom told her that the energy seemed to come from the toiletry closet on the far side of the house between the guest and the master bedroom. MS and my mom looked in the said closet, and MS saw that she had a canister of arrowheads and what possibly could have been a piece of jawbone that was found out in the woods by my mom's late Aunt Tilly and her husband. MS told my mom that she would need to put these back into the woods where they were found, and she offered my mom to do this for her. Also, that she would need to burn sage throughout the house. When my mom and MS did this, it came back worse, and the energy was very hostile then. Finally, it was summertime, and I came down to visit, and I was put in the second bedroom, catty corner to the bathroom. The first night I was there, I easily picked up on something, and it was very hard to get to sleep. During my time at the Toronto House, we weren't there very long because we were being evicted because the owner and his wife wanted to move back into the house. When it was at night, the energy was very disquieting, and in the room I was afraid of sleeping with the nightlight. I was afraid that I would see a black mass or shadows or something. Eventually, I could not sleep in that room anymore, and I ended up sleeping in the living room for the remainder of the time we were there. I told my mom, and she was very understanding, as we were both very sensitive. She told me about the square of carpet that was missing and was replaced with another piece of carpet, and there was a stain underneath it. This was in the bedroom I was staying in. I made the mistake of looking underneath it and feeling sick. On the last day that we were at the house, we were moving stuff from the old house to the new one, which wasn't very far away, as Burnie is a small town. The last thing that we needed to pick up was some clothing, which was in the garbage bags in the front living room, and maybe a few other things that I don't quite remember anymore. Anyway, it was just my mom and I that night, and we walked there from the new house, and when we entered the nearly empty house, the energy was very heavy and malicious. The house seemed extra dark, and even when my mom turned on the light in the hallway, already I felt scared. We were there for maybe 10 minutes at the most, but it felt like an hour. With each passing moment, I felt more and more terrified, as whatever it was made the house feel very unsafe. My mom even started to feel panicked, too, and she wanted nothing more than to get out of the house, and when we left, it felt as though something was following us to the door. However, once we were out of the house, everything felt fine, but we were still left with chills. That's all I have for now. I do have more if you guys want to hear, but that thus far has been the most intense situation I have felt in a prolonged period of time. I just got into your podcast and absolutely love you guys. Keep up the good work.
I think it's interesting that when they tried to fix the situation by taking those items and putting them back where they belong, that it actually made things worse.
It is kind of odd.
Yeah, because usually you would think that that would help the situation.
It's almost like whatever was there wanted those items there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe the objects were not necessarily what was sourcing the energy or the emotion, but it was something that maybe even actually calmed whatever the heck was there.
Maybe so. Or maybe there was something attached to those items that
left.
The overbearing presence kind of controlled.
Okay.
And that took some of the power away and that made it mad.
I could see that too.
Because I think there's something tied in with the carpet and the stain. And
I want to know what the stain was.
I don't know.
I want at least a description. There's like nothing. There was a stain. Really could mean anything.
It's scary though.
It is scary because it could mean anything.
Uh-huh.
It's like, is this blood? Is this a blue dress stain? What sort of stain are we talking about?
Right.
It's kind of disturbing. But a good story nonetheless. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your stories with us. Another letter. The ideology of keeping a knife under the pillow or by the bed is a form of protection in our culture. Before the majority of Hmong people migrated to America, they lived in the jungles of Laos. Living in the forest, there were many paranormal experiences that would occur. Ghosts were the norm in those societies. Unlike here, people are not looked at as being crazy or delusional if they claim they saw a ghost or an entity. To ward off evil spirits, you would have shamans to perform rituals to divide the living and the dead. They're also healers. Sometimes those boundaries would be crossed and a ghost would follow someone home and sit on the individual when they fall asleep, which is a form of attack on the individual. This is referred to as sleep paralysis. Most of the time back in Laos, it was so common to see these things that they would see the whole apparition, which is super scary. Imagine no street lights walking home through a forest trail. They're lucky if the moon is full with no clouds. My grandmother and uncles have lots of scary stories, and they've told me about their past experience when they lived there. There are even legends of Bigfoot, too, but that would be totally off topic. So back to the reason why a knife should be kept under the pillow is because the knife empowers the individual. When one is in a dream state, it empowers them to spiritually overcome the negative spirit or energy. So I agree with Jenny. It is psychological because being spiritually connected is psychological. I was taught as a young child that I must keep a calm, grounded heart and not be easily influenced by these entities that come in forms of feelings most of the time. Even if one doesn't see it or hear it, it's feelings that they usually use to communicate through us. For an example, suicides. Sometimes it's through these negative thoughts that one wouldn't usually have, but because they're already in such a vulnerable state from being depressed or stressed or whatever, that excites these ghosts or demons and they pounce on that chance and feed you thoughts of things that you would never really say with a clear head. But they push and push, and sometimes you really believe the words these things are saying to you because they will use the facts in your lives against you. Everything that you've ever done wrong, they twist into a very nasty state and throw it back at you. They make you feel as though you deserve to die, which is awful. To protect yourself from these entities, you must listen to your spiritual being and really know what your voice sounds like. Learn to listen to yourself and not something else. And do not let those influence you if you know it is negative, a negative being. How you do this is usually through meditation. I've had a few experiences myself. I've personally kept a knife by my bed as well as other protection symbols due to other reasons too, but that will be for another day. Sorry for the rambling on of stuff. I got carried away. Love you too. Listen every day at work, and it breaks my heart that I listened to all the EPP episodes and all the regular episodes. Can't wait for more.
I had thought maybe that was a psychological thing, and sure. with the empowering,
mm-hmm.
that is very much what she's talking about. But I love learning about different cultures and how they seem to battle the paranormal or how they handle certain things. And I love the explanation of sleep paralysis.
I'd be really afraid that I'd cut myself.
Yeah, because I stick my hand up under my pillow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see my finger being sliced off.
I would have no fingers by morning.
No.
I would be like just moving around. What is this? And all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah.
Gone. That would not last very long. It would be a very... But I get, you know, by the bedstand or something, more where I'm not going to accidentally get at it at night.
Mm-hmm.
Although I could see myself doing the same thing there too, with like in a nightstand where it's like, oh, reaching for a cough drop and oops.
You spill your water in the middle of the night again.
There goes your pinky.
Yep.
That's exactly what would happen. But it does make total sense mm-hmm. with the explanation. So thank you for enlightening us on that topic there. Arlen writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. First, we want to start by saying thank you for reading my story on one of your EPP episodes. Nearly fell out of my chair with excitement when I heard you reading my story about the thing in the spare room that mimicked my own voice. Wanted to write to you today, tell you another story that happened to me while I was in college. At the time, I was studying photography at Arizona State University. The photography building on campus is a repurposed dorm from when the campus was first built, and it was also a library at some point as well. The building itself was split into two levels with a large staircase in the middle, which brought you up to the very long hallway of the second floor. This hallway had a number of doors leading off of it. Some of them were professors' offices, some were classrooms, and two were dark rooms for printing photographs. Just think of the hallways in the movie The Shining, but with linoleum. There we go.
There you go.
Linoleum floors and white walls. It's exactly what it looked like. One day I'd been slaving away in the darkroom trying to finish up some final touches on photographs as it was finals time. I had a big critique in the next couple of days. I neglected to notice what time it was until the lab aide came in and told me I needed to leave because it was time for the photo lab to close. I begged her to let me stay just a little longer as I only had one more exposure to do on a particular photograph and wanted to run it through the chemicals to develop it. She agreed and told me she would lock all the doors to the darkroom and workroom and to close them as I was done working. She then said that she was going to lock the front doors because she didn't want anyone else coming in trying to work while no one was there, but that I would just have to push on the door and it would unlock. I thanked her when about finishing up my final print. It was about an hour and a half later, which I'd been coming in and out of the dark room, gathering my things from the workroom and storing my photographic equipment in the lockers, which were located about three-fourths down the long hallway of the second story. I was supposed to meet a friend outside of the photography building as we were going to go to a library and work on a research paper. I decided I'd use the restroom in the photography building before I went downstairs. For reference, the women's restroom in the building is all the way down on the very east end of the hallway. The dark room was on the opposite west end of the hallway. I make my way down to the restroom, passing all of the closed doors. While I'm there, I hear footsteps on the linoleum outside, and then heard the door to the restroom open. And I can also see the bottom of the door open under the gap of the bathroom stall. However, no one came in. As I was in there after hours, I just figured that the lab aide had come back to make sure I had closed and locked all the doors and to see if I was still there. I finished up in the restroom and walked out the door to start walking to the central staircase. I looked up towards the opposite end of the hallway towards the darkroom when I saw a black figure of a woman standing in front of the door to the darkroom. It did startle me, however, I just figured it was another photography student. She looked like a shadow because all the lights were off. Shrugging it off and I looked down at my phone to tell my friend to meet me outside. I had made it only a couple of steps when I looked up again. The woman had somehow moved over 30 feet. So she was now standing just to the west of the central staircase with her hand extended towards me. What really got me, however, is that even though there were huge skylights in the stairwell, which flood into the central section of the hallway, I still couldn't see any features of her whatsoever. All I could tell is that she was shorter than me, wearing a skirt with her hair down. It was like looking into a black void in the shape of a woman. When I realized that she had moved at superhuman speed without making a single sound, I decided it was time to leave, and I booked it out of there. After telling my friend what had happened, we went to her dorm and looked up to the history of the building. Supposedly, back when it was a library, there was a fire and a woman died trying to escape down a side staircase. I don't know if it's real or not, but I am wondering if maybe the figure that I saw was that woman trying to make contact with me. All I know is that whenever I had to go back to into that building for my classes, I always thought of the shadow woman who scared the crap out of me. Sincerely, Arlen.
I don't know that I would have wanted to go back to my dorm and research the history of the building after having that.
Just kind of leave it be and...
Yeah, because I in my mind can say, oh, that must have just been somebody else in there, even though they're floating and extending their arms out to me. That must have just been another student.
That's normal.
That's normal.
Bath salts.
Right.
That's what it was.
A student on bath salts.
Exactly. I mean, it's like that's what they're the people who have been described as having zombie-like characteristics. Uh-huh. You know, that's what a lot of them have been on. So I guess, you could kind of write that off. It's like, oh, bath salts again.
Yeah.
Doesn't explain the floating, but maybe they're really special bath salts.
So much for working late on projects anymore.
Yeah, I guess it really kind of ends that for you, doesn't it? Once that happens. Gosh, that's a creepy story. Thank you for sharing that that experience with us here at Real Ghost Stories Online. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. May writes in, hello, Tony and Jenny. This isn't my personal story, but it's a family member's story. I'm Hmong, and as you may or may not know, the spiritual world plays a big part in our culture. I know why these couples do it, but I don't understand why it seems to be a pretty common for Hmong lovers to do this, mostly the older generation, but there seems to be a few younger generation couples that still do it. But what they'll do, I guess, in a sense, to prove, I'm not sure if that's the right word for it, their undying love and commitment to one another, the couple will make a blood oath where they seal it by drinking each other's blood. Okay, I was wondering what doing it was meaning for a while there.
Not like it.
I know, they kept saying, do it, do it, do it. I'm like, when a man and woman love each other very much.
No, they drink each other's blood.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I'm sure it's only a drop or whatever, but that's what they'd do. Well, I mean, in the U.S., I mean, it's not done anymore, but, you know, I would say even, you know, people of our parents' age, like, remember kids and stuff, this is not anything I think we did because when we were growing up, there was the AIDS epidemic and everything out there, but like the blood brothers
and
things of
that
nature. Kids wouldn't drink each other's blood, but there was less stigma to it, I guess, you know?
Well, but there was probably significantly less blood shared as well.
Sure. And I think less education of what could happen too.
Yeah.
I think that's probably what this goes back to, probably in some of this story and other cultures as well, where that just really wasn't looked upon as, oh, what could possibly go wrong here?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So continuing on, in the old days, depending on your status, if the guy was an orphan, came from a poor family or a family with poor health, the girl's family usually wouldn't allow them to marry, especially since he would probably not have the means to pay a dowry.
Dowry.
What's dowry?
That's where, in certain cultures, when you marry a woman, you get a large, almost like inheritance without them dying. So, like, you marry somebody, but she comes with a house, or she comes with a bunch of gold, or, you know.
Interesting.
A lot of other faraway countries do that. And I say that very uneducated, faraway countries.
Faraway countries. Other than Kansas, where we're at right now?
Yeah, no, I can't think of certain places, but...
Sure. In some cultures, that's what it is.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. That would not go on here.
Faraway cultures.
Yes, like Missouri or Colorado.
And I'm sorry, I just insulted a whole bunch of different people. I didn't mean to.
I don't think you did.
Okay.
It's just, yeah, it's just, it, I was unfamiliar with the term.
Yeah.
Okay. Most young couples wouldn't get to marry each other, so even having made this oath, they'll move on with their lives. Of course, in the new age, couples usually break up on their own terms. The elders have always told us that the reason why making blood oaths is taboo in our culture is because when one of the two who made this blood oath together passes away, they'll come back for the other. I've heard so many stories of this happening. Having moved on, some people will completely forget about the blood oath they've made until, unbeknownst to them, the person they made the oath with dies and comes back as a ghost. Take them with them into the afterlife. Sorry for such a long intro, but I wanted to give you guys a background of the superstition or whatever you'd call it. Well, this family member made a blood oath with his girlfriend when they were, I think, 12, which is ridiculous, but she ended up passing away not too long after. I don't know if the haunting started even before he got married, but he got married a couple years after her death, and the wife has always sensed a presence. According to the wife, they've always been haunted. They'll wake up to their clothes being pulled out of their drawers, their children will be bothered at night, and just really noticing a presence around them all the time. They had a spirit ceremony done by a shaman to see what was the cause of all this, and the shaman said it was the husband's ex-girlfriend. In the process of negotiating with her to leave them alone, the ex-girlfriend would only leave them alone if they agreed to name their next daughter after her, which the husband was willing to do. But of course, his wife was not. They never named the daughter after the ex-girlfriend, so I'm not sure if they are still haunted by her or if they're doing something else to try and keep the spirit away. In a lot of stories I've heard of these blood oaths, at least one living usually is taken, dies shortly after. The story doesn't sound as scary because it's hard to explain the things that our culture does or believes in. In the movie Insidious, how the little boy and his dad are able to astral project into the other realm, that's similar to what our shamans are able to do. Shamans, while performing their spiritual ceremony, they always have a piece of clothing or cloth covering their face so the dead spirits in the realm won't see their face. The shamans are usually guided by their personal spirit guides, but while in their realm, they're supposedly able to find out what this particular person they're performing the ceremony for is sick, haunted, whatever the reason they're performing the ceremony for. But I hope this story is at least interesting for you guys and the listeners. You have an awesome podcast.
Just goes to show you never know the true repercussions of your actions until somebody dies.
That's true.
You know, you never would have thought, oh, if I do this with the person I love at the moment, you know, that they're going to haunt me forever until I die.
Well, we had a bloodletting ceremony at our wedding.
No,
with,
we did
with
not.
With leeches. There was the,
that is so gross.
There was the leeching.
No.
The leeching of the groom. Where I,
you did mention us haunting together.
We did. That was actually in our vows.
Seriously, that was.
So that was, you do have to do that now.
And we had no idea we'd ever be doing the show at that time.
No, actually, we didn't. The show didn't exist yet.
Nope.
I don't even think, like, I don't know if any incarnation of it did. Like, the once-a-year ghost story on YouTube, I don't think I even posted that yet.
No.
I've been saving them.
It was just meant to be.
Yeah, that's funny. We should do leechings, though. At
no.
More.
God, leechings at work.
I hated leeching. But did we, like...
Like, go to work and give blood because the blood mobile's there? No, let's do a leeching.
I wasn't
that's
even thinking that,
messed
but that's,
up.
That's totally messed up. I was just, I was.
You
just,
say what I say is messed up?
I was just referencing playing in the creek as a kid, is what I was getting to, and then you come out after playing in the creek, you know, you're moving rocks and stuff around, and then you get there's leeches that end up on you.
Okay,
and it's always pretty gross.
All I can think of is that scene in Stand By Me where the kids come out of the swamp and they're covered in leeches.
Oh yeah, that is pretty gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that how one of the kids dies in Stand By Me from the leeches?
No. Oh, okay. No. Kid gets hit by a train.
Leeches would have been a little bit more dramatic.
No, a lot of leeches.
No kid would have ever played again in water if that's how that movie ended. David writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. My name is David, and I'm from Norfolk in the UK. Back in the late 1990s, me and my wife both got a job working at the same care home. We were looking for a new place to rent, which was closer to our new jobs. By luck, we managed to find this house that was built in 1907. The house was a repossession from the bank. It was very cheap to rent. Almost straight away, we felt the house was very cold at night, even though we had the heating on. We both worked the same night pattern, so Only felt the cold evenings and our weeks off. Things got even stranger when our two cats would sit on the arm of the sofa and hiss at something that we could not see. One afternoon, my wife needed to use the bathroom, and as she started to descend the stairs, she felt she was pushed. We took her to the ER, where they said she broke her nose and found a strange footmark on her back. Spoke to the man next door, and he said that a really old couple had lived there for many years. He said the story goes the man hung himself from the roof of the stairs when his wife found him. She was so upset she drowned herself in the cesspit in the garden.
Yuck.
That would. What exactly is a cesspit?
Remember we had the discussion of what a lagoon is here in Kansas?
Oh.
Yeah.
That's that?
Yeah.
It's sewage?
Yeah.
And you have that like by the garden?
Well, they refer to gardens as yards.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So out in the garden, out in the yard.
In the yard?
In the lagoon, basically.
Gosh,
to put it into really stupid Kansas terms.
It's not a good way to go.
No, of all places to drown yourself.
Why?
Drown yourself in sewage.
God.
I couldn't even get over the fence.
After hearing this, we set up a mortgage as quick as we could, and we moved out within a couple of weeks. We've been in our new house for 14 years and have never had any problems here. Keep up the great work. I'm a proud EPP, David, from the UK.
That's just gross. That's like, ugh.
That's like the ghost that comes back and everybody's like, oh my God, it looks so gross and disgusting and scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, that's why.
And why does it smell foul? Is it a demon or is it just a cesspool ghost?
That could be confusing.
Yeah.
On that one specifically. Yeah. Yeah. Perry writes, and hi, Tony and Jenny. My name's Perry. I live in Sweden. I want to start out by saying I absolutely adore the show, and it makes my training sessions at the gym so much more fun. I'm considering becoming an EPP in the near future. One of the stories I'm about to share took place in the house I currently live in, and the other in our old house. Without further ado, here goes. When I was 8 years old, the house my family lives in belonged to my grandma, and a couple of years ago, she sold the house to us. One night, my grandma, my younger brother, and I were watching TV in the living room, and I was bored, so I kept looking out the glass balcony door. And I suddenly saw a kind of see-through white woman standing by the door. She was tall, had long, curly hair, and had no pupils. Everything about her was see-through, yet white. The woman started moving her hand towards the door handle, but before she could reach it, she vanished. I never saw the white lady again. My other story takes place in our old house when I was about 15 years old. We were taking care of my mom's friend's dog, and they were generally very quiet dogs. Sometime in the late evening, I heard someone hum a melody from downstairs, and shortly after the humming, the dog started barking. I assumed it was my mother humming, which isn't common with her, but I didn't think much of it. I was about to go to the bathroom, and it happened to glance to my parents' room, and they were both fast asleep. I have several other stories that I plan to share soon, but that's probably enough for now. Keep up the good work. Perry.
Just enough to know that there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
Something going on.
So, such a common line to the stories where I thought it was my parents or insert person here. Then I walked past their room and they were sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this just happens very, very often in a lot of our stories. Is it... Does the time of day have anything to do with hauntings? Are you more likely to have it in the evening hours? I know there's like the witching hour and all of that.
Yeah, but, the witching hour.
But like at, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, you know, people are already kind of going to bed. Are you more likely to have a haunting then than you are at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Or is it just kind of relative?
I don't know. You always hear of things more at night, but I'm besides just the witching hour. And I'm wondering if that's because things are scarier at night.
Sure.
Just because there's lack of, you know, there's not a lot of light. It's just, in general, most creepy stories start, it was a dark and stormy night.
Sure.
So I don't know.
Is it also just because a lot of times bats and people are home as well?
That could be.
You know?
But there's a lot of stories of people working late.
Sure.
At their work in the evening or late.
And
tonight,
they
have an instance. Now, could it be just because things are quieter
mm-hmm.
and you're less likely to have the noise of the daytime and you can hear those things or see those things?
Less distractions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. Charlotte writes in, I'm an empath and have some trained psychic abilities. I used to hear spirits talking to me when I was a kid and have tons of ghost stories to tell from my childhood. But this is one of the scarier incidents that I can remember. Must have been no older than 9. Shared a room with my younger sister at the time, and when we first moved out, moved our stuff into the bedroom, my brother was born. I was always bothered by one particular corner of the room. It always seemed to be darker than the other corners, and I always felt anxious when my back was to it. Anyway, I just shut off the light one night, was trying to fall asleep, when I had the sudden urge to open my eyes. I was drawn straight to the corner. Standing there was this dark mass. Must have been over 6 feet tall and was blacker than black, darker than the rest of the room. I was frozen, terrified, just staring at this thing. And I took a step forwards. I don't think I've ever been that scared of an entity in my life. I could feel it step in 3 huge strides across the room as I quickly rolled over to face the wall and threw the covers over my head. That's when I felt it lean over me, as if it was trying to look at my face hidden beneath, my face hidden anyway. By this point, I was almost in tears, petrified by whatever this was. I stayed like that for who knows how long, muttering under my breath for it to leave me alone. I must have fallen asleep after some time, because the next thing I knew, my mom was waking me up for school. Since that incident, I've not been able to sleep in the dark and usually have the TV on when I go to bed.
And it makes you wonder, okay, at what point does that end? At what point does you have to sleep with the light on? Or is that just like for the rest of your life?
I think if it were me, it'd be for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I think it'd be a lot of work to get over that one.
I mean, even, you know, with a lot of therapy to get through it,
mm-hmm.
It's still a memory that's going to be there.
Sure.
And it's still a what if that really you can't put a whole lot of, you know, reasoning behind.
Yeah.
To kind of calm it down. That's a scary thing. Thank you for sharing that experience with us here on the show. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. All right. Here's the phone call.
Yeah.
That Jenny is excited about.
I liked it.
All right. I'm ready for it. Here we go.
Hi, Jenny and Tony. It's Dana from Canada again. I have another story that I want to share with you. This one, if you remember, I was the person that called in about about my father coming to visit me and maybe perhaps taking me to the other side and then returning me, and how it kind of opened something up inside of me to make me, I guess, a sensitive now. From listening to your stories, I've kind of realized that I probably am a sensitive now. I never used to be, but since that happened, why don't I tell you my story from Mexico, and you tell me what you think happened. So I recently, and when I say recently, I mean like last month, went down to Mexico for a good friend's wedding. I was actually her maid of honor, and we spent the entire week in beautiful Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, kind of running around, getting everything ready for this wedding, and then having this beautiful beach ceremony. And me and my boyfriend decided to stay in Puerto Vallarta for 4 days after the wedding, just to relax and have a bit of a vacation ourselves. Being a maid of honor can be a little bit hectic, as you know. So anyways, it was the day after the wedding, and we were both pretty exhausted and just a tinge hungover, and we were laying on the beach, and it was like 2:30 in the afternoon, beautiful, sunny. Like, last thing on my mind was, oh, I'm about to experience something paranormal. And I was laying there, and he was laying beside me, and I had my headphones just wrapped kind of around my neck, just sort of dangling there, and I was just trying to figure out what I wanted to listen to, and I heard in one side of my head, I heard the words, "Help me." And it sounded like a male voice. And I turned over and I looked at Noel and I said, "Do you say something?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Do you say help me? Do you like?" And he said, "No." And I said, did you hear someone say help me? And he said, it's probably coming out of your earbuds that are dangling around your neck. And I thought, oh yeah, of course. So I put my earbuds in, I pick the music I want to listen to, and I'm just relaxing in the shade. But then I hear it again. And this time it sounds a little more intense, and I hear, help me. And it's a male voice, an older male voice, and it is clear as a bell this time. I mean, it sounds like someone is just saying it right into my ear. So I take out my earbud, and I look at Noel, and he obviously is in his own, like, zone. And I know it's not him. It doesn't even sound like his voice. And I can't figure out what is going on. Is it the music? Is it in the earbud? And am I just hearing things? Did I get some like sand in my ear before and it's just causing a weird... Anyways, I lay back down after looking around and realizing there's really nobody within earshot range of us to be able to say those words, and it doesn't look like anyone's distressed. Everyone on the beach is either lying there applying like sunscreen, reading a book, just chilling out. Like, there is obviously nobody in distress. There wasn't even anybody in the water that I could see. The waves were coming in a little bit strong, so they had the red flag up. So people really weren't swimming. So it's not like it was someone screaming in the ocean, like drowning or anything. So anyways, I lay back down and I hear it again, only this time it goes, oh God, I don't want to die. Somebody help me. And this time I sit straight up again, and Noel's like, what is with you? And I said, I said, Noel, I don't know what's going on, but I keep hearing someone saying, help me. I said, you can't hear that? And he said, no. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm getting visibly upset because the distress in this man's voice that I'm clearly hearing in my left ear is... It doesn't sound like a phantom voice. It doesn't sound far away. It sounds so real. It sounded like somebody was right next to my ear and asking me to help them and panicking and just like the fear, the terror. Oh my God, I don't want to die. And I'm looking around the beach and I don't see anything. I see a pile of rocks going, a large pile of kind of volcanic type rocks going into the ocean. I see a group of people sitting over by those rocks. I see couples and kids, and there is just nobody in distress. And I'm sitting up and I'm looking around and I'm taking my sunglasses off and I'm just trying to figure out what the hell is going on here. And I think to myself, like, what should I do? Should I just start walking around the beach? Should I just, like, what it, like, I couldn't figure it out. And it was, I couldn't relax. I knew something was happening and I just didn't know what. So I'm sitting up and I hear it again. And Noel knew I was hearing it because he could see me physically reacting to it. And he goes, did you hear it again? And I said, yes, I heard it again. And he said, well, why don't you just answer it? Just answer it, ask it. What it needs help with or who it is or where it is or something. So I just said, where are you? And I got a reply. The voice said, I'm stuck in the rocks. And I said, what rocks? And he said, the black rocks. And I stand up and I don't know, probably about 300 feet away, there's a pile of black kind of volcanic-y looking rocks, really sharp and shardy, and the waves are crashing up on them and they go into the ocean. And I'm looking and the wave is crashing up on it, and then the water is, you know, getting sucked out of the rocks, and then the waves going back over the rocks, and I'm looking and I see something out of place. I see this white, shiny looking thing laying in between some rocks, like a circular kind of oval. And I start walking towards it, and then I start running towards it. And the group of people sitting right next to these rocks, they start looking at me because I am full out Baywatch sprinting at this point towards these rocks. And the closer I get to these rocks, I actually see him. There was an older man. He was in his late 50s, and the white thing I was seeing was actually his face. The rest of his body was submerged into water, up against these dark rocks, and his It turns out that his leg was caught in between two of these rocks, and all that was sticking out of the water was the very top of his face. And I get to him, and I scream to the people that are sitting literally like 10 feet away from these rocks, "Somebody help me." And three of the guys jump up. Noel came running after me because he's not sure what the hell's going on. And we all kind of literally lift this guy up, and someone unhooks his ankle, and we drag him out of the ocean, and we lay him on the beach, and he's coughing up all this water, and he's pale as a ghost. Like, his lips were, you could almost see the blue tinge of color around his lips. Like, he was seconds from dying. And we turn him over and sit him up, and he said, "Oh my God, thank you so much." He's like, I was gonna die. He's like, one more wave crash on me. He's like, that was it. He was like, I was literally just saying my goodbyes in my head. He's like, I knew that was it. And the people that were sitting right next to him the whole time this was happening said, "Why didn't you call out?" And he said, I couldn't. He said, I was choking. I was drowning. He's like, I couldn't. And they looked at me and they said, "How did you see him from the other side of the beach?" And I said, "I don't know. I said, the light shone on his face in the right way. And I didn't want to tell him that I had heard him in my head. I just said that I saw the shininess of his white skin, his face, and I said I just caught it at the right angle, something out of my eye, something, and I knew that there was something happening, and I just started running full tilt. So then after the people left, it was just me and him, and I said, Are you sure you're okay?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm okay." And his wife comes over and says, "Oh my God, what happened?" And I tell her and him the story, and I said, "I actually heard you." And he said, "That was you?" I said, "That was me." And he said, "I heard you." And I said, "You heard me ask you where you are?" And he said, Yes, I heard you." He's like, "But I thought it was somebody calling to me," and I said, "No, that was me." And I said, "I was sitting like 300 feet over there, and I heard you saying, 'Help me, I don't want to die.'" And I said, "You kept saying, 'Help me,' and I heard you in my head." And I said, "I sat up and I looked around, and I said, 'I asked you where you were, and you told me you were stuck in the black rocks.' And I just started running towards the rocks, and then I saw your face when I started to approach, and I knew that there was somebody there, somebody that needed help." And we just both couldn't believe it, and his wife was crying, and he was choked up, and it was just very emotional, and Noel was looking at me like I was absolutely crazy, and like I had basically a second head growing out of me or something. He couldn't believe it. Nobody could believe it. But because we were all staying at the same resort, we didn't want it to get awkward. I mean, these sorts of things can be weird. So for the rest of the trip, whenever we would sort of see each other around, he would jokingly say, "Oh, I saw you from across the room, and I was telling you to try the reef fried beans tonight because they're amazing. Did you get my message?" And type stuff. So I mean, we kind of just laughed it off. But anyways, it was pretty amazing experience. It's something I'll never forget, and I still don't know how it happened. It must have been like some of those other stories that I've heard where, you know, that woman's, her neighbor's house is being broken into and she hears the distressed woman crying out, and it must have been something like that. But anyways, thanks for listening to my story, and I hope to hear it on your show.
Okay, so I know there's not technically a ghost in this story, but if it weren't for the paranormal, that guy would have died.
Yeah, I mean, there was something certainly paranormal going on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe not directly the ghost going, "Hey, there's a man over here," but something was delivering that message.
Yeah.
Something was allowing that line of communication to be there. How that works, why that works, I have no idea.
And how certain people pick up on that and others don't.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
That's it's not explainable, but obviously it does in fact happen because we have many stories like that. That's one of the better.
I like that one.
That was a very, very good one. Thank you for taking the time to share that story and emailing that audio file into us today. We greatly appreciate that. That wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, you want to keep it on the air, consider please becoming an EPP. Go to ghostpodcast.com, click Become an EPP. Only $5 a month, that's what keeps our show on the air. And you get all the bonus episodes, nearly 100 of them, exclusive video content, and more. So check that out and help keep this thing a-going. Ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.